while we try to talk 3:30 off the train track, here's another great song by Guitar Man, Richo and Sistock. But before we get into it, don't forget there'll be no official show on July the 4th. Anyway, this one's called Big Mouth. Take it away, Guitar Man. Bloody hell, 3:30.
At the way we are, things are the way they are. You sit and say to yourself, why can't things be the way they used to be? Well, I've got news for you. I ain't gonna fix this up for you. I've played this too long. It's time to move on. No better you to keep your big mouth shut. Open up your mouth and say the only thing that you could. And now you're so surprised. Look how you're so surprised. You did it to yourself again. And now you're so surprised. Look how you're so surprised. You did it to yourself again. Did it to yourself again. Again. Now, now. Oh, no. Use illusions, smoke the mirrors of real good. See what you need to see to make the problems up to me. Well, I've got a change of attitude. This time I think that I can choose to be your advocate. So let's look at all your shit for a change. If you get a little bad, you keep your big mouth shut. Open up your mouth and say the only thing that you could. Now you're so surprised, look out, you're so surprised. You did it to yourself again. And now you're so surprised, look out, you're so surprised. You did it to yourself again. Did it to yourself again. Again. Now big mouth, you open up your mouth and tell the words. Big mouth, you open up your mouth and then you chew me down. Now we can talk and I can listen seductively. We an hour comes out of one dozen. You're not gonna hurt me anymore, big mouth. You're not gonna hurt me anymore, big mouth. What would you say if you don't know what you've done? What would you say if you don't know what you've done? What would you say if you don't know what you've done? What would you say if you don't know what you've done? What would you say if you don't know what you've done? Big mouth.
From. Look out, here comes the train.
Get off the track!
3:30, no! But it's the only place I can pick up Wi-Fi.
Found a hot spot.
We're gonna miss 3:30. That was gay.
Here lies 3:30.
Let's get this thing rolling. It's 11:17 p.m. Central Standard Time. June 27, 2009, and once again, it's time for TIT Radio.
Parental guidance is suggested.
All right, welcome, hackers, crackers, and script kiddies. This is TIT Radio, the only show on Hacker Public Radio with super cow powers. Let's meet our round table of tits. Art V61.
How you doing, everybody?
Azmuth?
Yeah, you should have separated us. Nobody will tell the difference.
Was that Art or Azmuth? Clat 2.
Hello, everyone. shit, there's three of them.
And that Peter J. 64.
How's it doing?
330.
Hello.
Zoke.
Hey.
And is the missus there with you?
I'm here, but I'm just an innocent bystander tonight.
Okay.
She didn't do her homework.
Oh, no. Just a quick announcement from the IRC earlier today. Cecil Webb mentioned that there's a project called Basket Notepads. I don't know if you guys know about it. It's like a note-taking app. Well, they need some developers, or this project may vanish. So,
which app is this?
It's called Basket Notepads. I'll throw it in the IRC.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
It's a KDE one, isn't it?
I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Yeah, they need some developers bad, or it's going to vanish.
What is it written in? Do you know? Does it say?
I'm not sure. I just got the link. And
I see. Yeah.
But I guess they're still using, you know, the old Qt, where it's compatible with KDE 3.5, so they need to convert it to KDE 4.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if the lead developer is going to give it up, or he just needs help. I'm not sure. But if anybody's interested, check it out. All right, who wants to kick it off?
Didn't you forget 330?
No.
Did you see him?
He was right after you.
Ah, sorry. I thought you missed you. You should have missed
him. I was going to say, we're getting something on. We've got to find out who the sheriff is.
Oh, that's right. You know what? Maybe I should just be the sheriff, because I have a feeling there's going to be like the palm against Aussie, and it's just going to be a feud all night. Yeah, I'll be the sheriff. I don't trust you guys.
Oh, come on. You don't trust the evil one?
Well, plus I found out that that wheel that I spin is rigged.
It's not, is it?
Yeah,
no.
It's rigged. BSD Bob, he's the one that put it
I
together.
I think the guy spinning it is rigged.
All right, Art, you want to start off?
Oh, sure, why not? I have... Today, actually the other day, I downloaded a couple of live CDs. I was kind of searching around for more things to put on my computers. And I came across Memphis Anti-X, it's called. It's got Fluxbox on it. It's got, I mean, they build this thing as something that a Vista or a XP user could fall right into. I mean, it really is a neat distro. I would say it's better than it runs on Fluxbox. It has a beautiful screen view when you load it up, and it's like 468 meg CD. It's quite a nice. It's got IRSSI on it with screen and everything built right in it.
How do you spell that so I can find it?
It's Memphis Anti-X. ANTIX. You get it to DistroWatch, you'll find it in there. But it's also for older hardware. They bill it as because of the Fluxbox and some of the other things that are on it. I mean, they say it'll work with 64 mega RAM. I mean, it's really, like I said, it's quite a, it'll work on a Pentium 2. I mean, this is the way they're billing it. Plus, it also has support for webcams and media players, different media players in it. I'm actually thinking about trying this on my Triple E.
So this thing is going to run on a P2 266 megahertz with a mere 64 mega RAM.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. That's only what they're saying. I have it running on a Pentium 3700. The only thing they do say that it doesn't work on K5 and K6 AMD processors. I don't know why, but it's
it uses the i8-686 kernel, that's why. Because I just read that.
It's running 2.7, I think, right? 2.6, 2.7 kernel. And what else? That's a lot of... I mean, I can't believe the applications that come in this. Out of the box, it's fascinating to see what's in this thing. As far as things you get, I mean, it's got links in it. If you want to use command line, you don't have to put any of this stuff in. It's got the RSS Atom reader. you know, set up for a BitTorrent, and I'm surprised at the things that it has in it.
Hey, Art, what was the size of the ISO download? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was 468 meg.
Nice.
But otherwise, I think people should take a look at this. This might be a good distro for people to put on somebody's computer to really let them check out Linux. As, it's a good cross between Windows and Linux, I think. I've seen many, many distros that I went through. You know, I'm still going through, I should say. But this one really looks sharp. Anybody got any comments?
What about, like, multimedia support and stuff like that out of the box? Like, if I just gave this to a friend, could they pop it in their computer and kind of feel like they were computing like normal, or do I need to sit there and install it with them and install MP3 support and all that other good stuff?
No, but it looks like this. I mean, it's got DVD player support in it. It's got ALSA. It's got Stream Tuner in it. It's got Ripper in it. Yeah, I mean, it's all set up, you know, right out of the box. I've only played with this thing for a little bit, but I'm pretty impressed with it. Of course, I'm a, you know, noob, so. I mean, it's even got peripherals for a scanner, and you know what I mean, within the program.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, I'm going to try this on my AAA. I'm going to give it a run, because I got Mint running off a SD card right now, and I'm going to wipe that what's on and see how it runs, because I like it. I mean, it's nice. It's a nice layout right out of the box. Like I said, you don't have to do anything as far as configuring it, I don't believe.
Yeah, I don't know if it was my connection or yours, but you were cutting out. But what desktop did you say was default?
Fluxbox.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's running Fluxbox. You can also... Go ahead.
Well, I was looking at the wiki page, and it's showing ICE Window Manager.
It's got... you can run ICE WM, yeah.
That comes with Fluxbox 1.1.1.
That's the latest.
You know, and apparently, they talk about this guy, Ante, who was a Brit living and working last 19 years in Greece. Thessaloniki or something. It's supposed to be the second largest city in Greece. And basically, this thing is remastered Mepis.
Well, it looks nice. Screenshots.
Like I said, it's really, I was surprised.
What do you mean by it includes the SIDUX meta installer? Does anyone know what that is? Is that something to do with Debian SIDUX or something?
Yeah, as far as I know, Mepis uses a hybrid of both Ubuntu and Debian repositories for its package management. And so I don't know exactly what the meta installer is, but I mean that's probably why it mentions that. Probably for the meta packages and things like that, I would imagine, from SIDUX.
Fair enough.
Well, let us know in 2 weeks how it works.
Absolutely. Like I said, and anybody, you know, want to throw something at somebody, this is definitely one for the look of.
Anything else before we move on?
Okay, that's it for me.
All right, Peter. Peter
no,
J.
That's about it for me.
Peter J. That sounds so official. Just to clarify something from our previous tit, was that I was talking about the Dello board and I said about the F keys. Well, as it turned out, I went into the BIOS and you can change that. So the F1 to F12 key becomes the number one key, and then you have to hit the function keys to use the multimedia keys, which is a hell of a lot better. So I just thought I'd better clarify that. Now, also, I mentioned Celestia, and I was in the chat, and Cafe Ninja had just listened to the episode, and he said, "Hey, Peter, you talked about Celestia. Have you heard of Stellarium?" And I actually had used Stellarium quite a few years ago, but I decided to go and revisit it and have another look at it. And what I saw, I was really happy with. Now, Stellarium is an actual planetarium. When you install it, you're going to get something in the range of over 600,000 stars. There's extra catalogs available, which will get you up to over 210 million stars, which I would imagine would take most people's lifetime to go and look at. In actual fact, if you did the match, you probably couldn't look at all that. But, I mean, it's got a few features that probably set it apart from a normal, like K-Stars. Like, when you look at K-Stars and this thing, it's a completely different kettle of fish. It's so polished. If you, say, take a look at Jupiter, then you can hit your page in key, where you'll actually zoom right into Jupiter, where you'll see, and I take it it's using the same texture maps as Celestia used, where you'll get, a really good close-up view of what Jupiter or Saturn and all them look like through the Hubble Space Telescope. It also supports things like if you do have a projector and you're rich enough to own your own dome, you can actually do a spheric mirror projection, and you can, shine this up on your dome, and it's just like going to a real planetarium. Now, I also alluded to the fact that I thought Celestia, you could use the two-line elements data that you can get from, there's heaps of them online where you can go and get them, where it will then map in real-time satellites, etc. Now, I'm still not sure whether Celestia did that, but Stellarium definitely does it. So you can go and get all these satellite plugins and the TLE data, and you can have, as you're looking in the night sky, you can have, it'll show you where a satellite's going to zoom overhead. The other thing with it too is, if you're like me and you sort of run out of things to look at, then you just purely hit the F3 key, which is a search function, and you can just type a letter, like say, let's talk about Betelgeuse, which I don't know if everyone's heard, but Betelgeuse is a star. I'm not even quite sure
how far away it is,
but But anyway, from what I understand with that star, that I won't say the name again, it's something like the eighth brightest star in the night sky. And it has actually shrunk around 15% in the last 15 years. And astronomers are getting really excited because they think this actually could be about to go supernova. But anyway, something like that, you hear things like this on the news. What do? You jump on Stellarium and you go straight and you look it up. Anyway, I've had a lot of fun playing with it. And anyone who's interested in that sort of stuff should go and grab it. It's available in most of the repos, I think you'll find. It's really good fun.
Yeah, that one night you told me about it, I tried it on Fedora, and it ran pretty good with that 3100 Intel chipset.
Yeah, it's not... I don't think... It does use OpenGL, I think, but it's certainly not a real intensive application. I'm sure that if you can run Compiz Fusion, you'll have absolutely no trouble running this.
Peter, did you say there's a big difference between that and Celestia?
Well, yeah, Celestia, how would you describe it? Celestia's more of... I wouldn't call Celestia a planetarium. Actually, they say it. It's a space simulation, whereas Stellarium is what you'd call a planetarium, where all it's doing is showing you points of light. You can go sit on your veranda with your laptop and you can look out at the stars, or you can look on your computer screen, and as long as you tell it you're facing the exact same direction, you'll see exactly what's in the night sky. And what you can do then is just click on this point of light, and it will tell you exactly the name of it, how far it is from Earth, what magnitude of light amplification it is, how far away it is, all that sort of stuff. So what it does is it's virtually telling you what you're looking at. But also, if you're looking at all the constellations and stuff like that, it'll map them out for you, so you can say, okay, there's, Scorpio or whatever, Sagittarius, anything like that that happens to be visible at that particular time of night. It's a real good thing, especially if you've got young kids. Yeah, sorry, Art.
Well, they don't want to go out and look at the stars anymore.
Well, in actual fact, once you sit inside and look at your bloody laptop, you're a bit disappointed when you go outside, because you get a much better view on your laptop. Like if you do install it,
yeah,
say
that's the one you can turn, right? You can.
Yeah, you can spin around, do like you can just point anywhere, and you can get rid of the horizon and down like at stars that you couldn't obviously see because they would be under your feet if you'd like. But the beauty of it is to sit out there with your kids on the veranda, and you know, look, you can quite frequently tell Mars because it's quite orange, and you know, you can point it out to your kids, and then you can jump on Stellarium and zoom right in and show them a good picture of what it looks like, and fire up Celestia as well. A beautiful application when you look at the screenshots of it.
Where'd you hear this application?
What do you need to run it, Peter?
Well, this particular one, like I said, I've used it many years ago but had forgotten all about it. And Cafe Ninja reminded me about it because he heard me talking about Celestia last week. Now, I can't remember what I heard about Celestia because I've used that for as long as I've used Linux.
Yeah, this is quite nice. I like the looks of it.
Yeah. I just posted three screenshots in there that I used, was playing with the other night. I mean, you only have to have just the slightest bit of interest in astronomy, and you can waste hours on those two programs. The only other thing, one day I'd like to buy a telescope and a motorized one. And now this says that you can hook a telescope up to it. Now, K-STARS, when I looked at it, you go in and in the configuration in K-STARS, it tells you, it lists a lot of telescopes that it supports. So when you plug one in, then you just go to a list and say, okay, this is the one I've bought. But in the README, it says it does support telescopes, but I couldn't find anywhere in any configuration anything about telescopes, which makes me wonder whether maybe that's only in the Windows version. Or so if you're going to go and buy a telescope and to use with Stellarium, I would certainly investigate that a fair bit more.
Yeah, that sounds like when you go to the planetarium here, like I was talking to you on IRC about, and you sit in a planetarium and you look up in that dome, and they go, you know, they move all around, and they draw out the constellations, and it's really neat.
Yeah, it is, and yeah, this is the same. You can fast forward time. You can, you know, go through and you can look at the next eclipse as it happens, or find out when it's going to happen, and all that sort of stuff. And Ping Jockey just said that it works like a champ on his EE PC. So that's
what's the minimum requirements to run it, Peter? You know.
I did read that art, but it would be pretty minimal these days, I think. As long as your graphics card can do OpenGL, I think you wouldn't have any problems with it. Yeah, I haven't got that right at the moment. And from what I understand, this is actually used in planetariums around the world, so that would give you an idea of how good it is.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. When you first start the program, you're like on the ground. You can see grass and everything.
Yeah, and I think you can actually go and take pictures. You know, you do the pictures all around your house, all around the area that you're in, and then you can actually use them in the program. So once you've set your location, then you could use your own front yard as, you know, the backdrop or the horizon, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
I'm just afraid I'm going to lose like 10 hours with this thing.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? And if you get the, is it the user's guide? The bottom of the user's guide, I think, that gives you a lot of suggestions of things to go and look at. So, you know, the simple thing, hit F3, type in, say, Jupiter, hit the space bar to center on Jupiter, and then if you hit your page up key, you will zoom right in until you can see the rings, and a hell of a lot more than you would ever see with your naked eye or the best binoculars you're ever going to buy. But you can zoom right in and just have a look at the surface of Mars. So it really does take planetariums to the whole next level.
So anything else on this one?
No, I'm happy.
All right. You want to go next, Klaatu?
Yeah, sure. I'm hoping... No, I'm not. I just heard Art. It's okay. I thought Art might be mentioning this one, but he didn't. So, yeah, so there's a program that I've talked about before, but it's being developed a lot lately. It's called SBO PKG. It's written by Chess Griffin, formerly of the Linux Reality Podcast. And if you're a Slackware user, this is a really, really cool application. It's basically a local front end for the very popular slackbuilds.org website. So Slackbuilds is sort of a community-driven website of a whole bunch of packages, Slackware packages, kind of set up for an easy, quick install on your Slackware box. And SBO PKG will rsync a list of all the packages available on Slackbuilds onto your local machine. You can browse through them. The new version of SBO PKG has a queue, so you can queue all the ones that you want to get installed in the order that they need to be installed in order to, you know, satisfy all the dependencies and stuff like that. And then you simply issue a command, and it goes and fetches them from the website. It builds the packages, and it installs the packages, and you're done. It's a really cool little application, and really small, you know, easy to compile, easy to use. It's really cool. And you can find it at sbopkg.org, I think it is.
Yeah, I must admit, Clark, too, that because of Chess, it's probably one of the reasons I stuck with Slackware. Like, at first it was good to, when I installed Slackware, got to learn it by actually building packages from source, etc. But
yeah.
After a while, sometimes you just want to get something and install it and get into it, and you didn't want to stuff it. Now, of course, you still have to muck around with dependencies, but
yep.
It makes installing those dependencies a hell of a lot easier as well. It just cuts out the steps that you manually have to go and do stuff for, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And the original...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the original one, you didn't get to actually, you still had to manually, after it went and pulled the packages down and built them, you still had to manually go and install them. But I think in the later version, you went in, there was a line there where you could just actually install it from there as well.
No, not actually, because what happened was, I guess, that they had some security people on the project, and they were like, you know, having the user run this package manager or this browser and being able to just install it from here is a big, like, you know, it's kind of weird to have this whole thing be sort of a root, you know, application. So what they're doing is, especially with the new queue that the new version has, or the newest version, there's yet another version coming out fairly soon. I imagine it will coincide with Slackware version 13. But the current version of SBO PKG, you can line up all your packages, get them in the order that you need them to be installed, so that, you know, the dependency gets installed before the actual application gets installed, that kind of thing. You line it up, you save that queue, and then you get out of SBO PKG. You switch over to root, and then you run that queue. And so then it goes through that whole queue. So it's sort of, you're still kind of using the browser to make a decision list and then taking another step to actually install it. But that's so that most of what you're doing is as a normal user, and you only have to drop down to root to get them to build and install, you know. So
I got an IRC message from Chess after we talked yesterday, and he said that in starting with 0.3, you will have to be root to run this, not just you know, not as, you won't be able to do this as a normal user. That's what he says in his thing.
That's interesting. Is that what he said? I didn't catch that. I didn't know that's the way they were going. But it kind of makes sense, because if you think about it, I mean, this is all about installing applications in places other than your local environment. So yeah, I mean, it is kind of a root function.
Right, and also he is, if you know anybody, he is also looking for testers for the 0.30 package that he's doing. And so he is looking for testers for it, for the SBO package, yes.
Well, I was just emailing about him about it, and he didn't mention that to me.
Yeah, matter of fact, it's on the topic. Go to that to the SBO package site, you know, the IRC channel, and you'll see it's on the topic. He changed the topic, and today I believe it was earlier.
Okay.
And he's coming out with a 0.30 alpha that he needs tested for. So.
I see it. Yeah. I wonder where you get that alpha. Probably on the Google code. Yeah, there's a Google code page I should have mentioned as well. I think it's Google code that whatever, like .com, I guess, and then /SBOPKG. But it's hosted on Google code, so if you search in there for SBOPKG, it will pop up.
Is it written in Python or Bash?
It's actually written in Bash. Say there's a command line interface that you can use, or there's an incursive interface that you can use. So you can do it either way you want.
Any more questions on that one?
No, I just have a comment on it, though. I did today, I mean, I hosed the system yesterday that I had on a newer machine, and I have an older small Pentium 3 that I got. It's got like 512 mega RAM. It's a 700 P3, I think it is, that I did put Slackware on, and I today installed GPotter with it, and it's real. I mean, it's nice because you can go to GPotter, do the README. It'll tell you what exactly files you need. I just wrote down the files, and then I went back to slackbuilds.org, and you can pick out those files and you add them to the queue, and then when you get done adding all your files, and you know, and if any of those files have dependencies, you can add them in along with it. And then at the end, you can either build the whole thing, or you can, there's an option to build and install, which is really nice. I mean, I just hit the thing and went and had coffee, and it was just building away. And if you have an error, it will stop if there's an error. And it'll tell you that, do you want to abort or do you want to continue on? And then when you're done, you have the option to save the queue just in case the package didn't, say you had a problem with a package where maybe you missed a dependency, you can go back and just run that package again from the queue. It's a great program.
Yeah, and I probably should mention, obviously there's the man page for it after you download it. I also did a how-to on the application itself on my secret blog, so I will post that link in IRC. Maybe you can add it to the show notes. So if anyone needs, like, it's got a walkthrough and stuff like that of how to use the application. And I just updated it today to reflect all the changes for the latest version. And I'll update it again once 0.30 is released officially.
Sweet. Do you know if this works with the new 64-bit?
No, it does not, because SBOPKG. Slackbuilds.org does not have 64-bit options yet. Now, since 64-bit is now official, one could assume that that Slackbuilds will start hosting 64-bit versions of Slackbuilds. So probably once that all happens officially, like the version 15 of Slackware, I would imagine everything's going to have, you know, it's 32-bit versus 64-bit options to it.
Sounds like it's that rotten POM's bloody turn wants to be anyway now.
Peter, that was uncalled for, Booby Ben.
Oh, man.
Well, since he's brought it up, go ahead, Zilk. Your turn.
All right, let me just question Stellarium and then I'll have a go. I was like, shit, how do I get out of this? But all right, Control Q. There we go. It went full screen on me, so. All right, so first of all, this is just a yay Linux quick story. USB 3.0 is around the corner. It's going to do, I think, 5 gigabytes transfer rate. And guess which OS is going to be the first to support it? Linux, of course. Sarah Sharp, self-styled geekass and Linux developer at Intel's Open Source Technology Center, has been working on it for like the last 18 months. So, I'm just going to say yay. But I've been playing around a little bit with the Mozilla Firefox add-on collector, where you can group a bunch of add-ons, and then it has it all on a page, and you can just click links and stuff. And so, and I think there's an add-on collector add-on itself that you can load them all in. So it's really easy to set up if you want, if you have some add-ons that you always run, and I do. There's certain ones I always run, and you can go and have a look at them and then install them nice and easily. I'm going to paste the link there into IRC, but it's addons.mozilla.org/n-us/firefox/collection/zoke. And you can go to that page, and it lists what it, well, I can add in whatever collections I want. But in this case, it's got NoScript, AdBlock Plus, Cookie Safe, Download Status Bar, Tree Style Tab, and Secure Login, which I run on most of my things. I have various profiles on Firefox, and I run these on all of them, basically. So I think this is really cool. It's a way of nice and easily just packaging all your add-ons together into one big lump. So that's cool. I don't know if anyone's got any comments about that, if anyone else is using it, but I think that's really cool. Nope, no comments at all. No, no. You see, Peter's not on. He's not there. He's in the booby bin, so he can't hassle me at all.
I'd say this actually looks really cool, and I'll probably be doing one before the night is over.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's cool, because you can just, all the add-ons you like, you just stick together, and there you go. As I said, there's an add-on collector add-on itself, as it were. And I'm assuming it makes it sort of one-click install all the add-ons, but I haven't played around with it yet. I only read about this a few days back and said, set up my own one. But it looks quite cool for what it does. And as I said, you can then go in and set your own ones up. And they've got a bunch of ones sort of already. They've got, you know, developer ones and all this, you know, what have we got here? 814 under web development. Oh no, sorry, that's all the add-ons. But they've got ones that bump a bunch of stuff in together. So if you're into doing web development, you've got ones that will measure the distance between it, so you can know what to set the CSS up for. And Colorzilla, so you know what the color is, and a bunch of other stuff. So
you know, it would be kind of cool.
Sorry, go on.
What would be really cool? Yeah, what would be really cool is if they had a click here to install all in this collection.
Yeah, well, as I said, they've got a collections, the add-on collector add-on itself, which I assume has to do that, because I can't imagine it does anything else really, but I haven't installed that yet.
Oh, I see. Okay, I see what you're talking about there. Yeah, but I mean, the page is nice. I just grabbed the AdBlock Plus off of the link that you posted, and it installed right, like just one click, and it installed right into SteamMonkey. No problem at all.
Well, in fact,
taking away from that page or anything.
If we bear with me a moment, then I will install the add-on collector add-on. Install now. Restart Firefox, and we'll see what that does. Cause it makes sense that it just does a one-click install or lets you grab them, because I can't imagine anything else that it would do, because all the add-ons are there on a single page. So, you know, what else is there for it to do, really? All right, one new add-on collected. Oh, I had too many windows open. It's going to take a moment to load them all up. Welcome, first run. All right, so... not obvious there. Is it under tools or something? I don't know. All right, it's not obviously going to help me here. I cannot spot an obvious add-on collector.
Well, whether it does the one-click install or not, it is kind of, I mean, it's really handy to have them on one page, And then it is nice that once you click it to install it, at least on SeaMonkey, it doesn't take you away from that page or anything.
Yeah.
So you can get on the list pretty quickly.
All right, I've got to set up my user ID and password for Mozilla to log in and stuff. But what you can do is if you're playing around with stuff, you can set up a one that you're playing around with, and then as you add or remove add-ons in Firefox, it automatically updates whatever. So whatever is, you can have one for your profile, and then whatever profile, Firefox profile add-ons you have, wherever Firefox add-ons you have, you can then automatically update the website.
Oh, that's cool.
There's an auto-publisher settings. So if you're playing around with stuff and it's crap and you remove it, then it's still, your page is instantly updated. So that's something for everyone to play around with, and we can discuss it next week. We can talk about it on Cranks, and we can all talk about which ones we've got set up. But I think, so that's cool, that's something for you to play with. And my second and final story is, I mean, everyone knows about Tor, I presume everyone knows about Tor, because obviously we all listen to Hacker Public Radio and we've heard that guy talk about Tor on there. But there's a few more ones that have come out, and one that looks interesting is one called BitBlinder, and it's a bitblinder.com. And it's meant to do the same kind of thing, but you set yourself up as a node when you run it, and then you can only download, you know, you have to have anonymous stuff routed through you before you can use it. There's a sort of percentage there, and it anonymizes everything. And in theory, because every person's now set up as a node, it makes it better than Tor, because Tor itself, if your exit node is compromised, then you have no security. But supposedly the way BitBlinder does it, it's a lot better.
That sounds pretty cool. What, it's all encrypted during the trip through the nodes?
That's what it says. Let me try and get the about page or the fact.
I was actually going to do this one. But, what it does is it's just like Tor, except for it's specifically for BitTorrent. Because if you do...
Oh, okay.
Because if you do BitTorrent over Tor, you tax the entire system, and your torrent downloads like crap. So this is a separate system, so it takes the load off of the Tor system, and then it works as it has. They're doing some other stuff to keep your torrent running quickly, but they're being kind of dodgy about it.
Well, it says on the page I posted into IRC, bitblinder.com/learn/overview. It does say here it supports both BitTorrent and normal web traffic, with more applications coming soon. So it suggests, or maybe they're just saying that so they don't instantly get shut down, because, you know, the only reason people use torrents is because it's evil and they're downloading illegal copies of Microsoft or whatever, or movies. I mean, I don't know about that, but it does say that it works on the normal website as well. As I said, I have not tried it at all, but read about it yesterday, the day before or something, and it looks interesting. I mean, they do say that, you know, it's not 100% secure, you can't be 100% secure, whilst in theory it is. If a government or your ISP looks at it, they could probably figure out, well, this is what's going on. Because that's one of the attack routes on Tor. You can look at this person requested something, it went to this Tor network, and at exact, you know, a millisecond later, that one went to this one, and then this one went to this child porn site, and the only person that, based on time analysis, the only person that, you know, the child porn site only was requested when this guy is requesting stuff, so this guy must be the person. I've heard of various people attacking Tor that way. I mean, you need to be an ISP or a government or somewhere fairly big with the resources to do this. But so I don't know. I was going to read up more about it and see exactly how good it is and what's going on. But it looks cool. So I thought I'd let everyone know because I figure everyone's going to find that cool. But that's my last story.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I use a transmission, and it has a built-in IP blocker, but I don't think it would do as much as this one.
I'd say it's one of those things you really want to do in layers. Yeah, you do the only encrypted traffic, which you can do in most BitTorrent clients now, where they have to be encrypted or it won't even share at all. And then you do the IP filtering and then run it through this, and yeah, they're probably not going to realize that you're downloading public domain works just to try and piss your ISP off.
Yeah, really, all I use BitTorrent for is to download Linux distros and legal movies and music.
Yeah, I think most of the use I get out of BitTorrent is for ISOs as well.
Yeah, I want to mention a couple things I found on Twitter this week. One is an ebook. It's called Linux 101 Hacks. Let me throw that in the IRC. It's a 12 chapters, 140 pages. It's free. The author, he also is the creator of the geekstuff.com blog. I don't know if you guys ever checked that out. It's pretty cool. He's got a lot of how-tos on it, news. It's a pretty good site. But anyways, the book, you know, has different command hacks, SSH, Apache, bash scripting, and a bunch of other hacks. I mean, it's a pretty cool book. The only thing is, you have, when you go to the website, you have to give him your email address, and then he sends you a password. But the book is in public domain, so I'll just link directly to it in the show notes so you guys can download it without having to sign up. And the other website I found on Twitter, this is just people I follow, and they posted it. It's called Lindesk. I'll throw that in the IRC too. It's another website with how-tos, and actually I'm posting stuff in the wrong IRC channel. That's why you guys aren't seeing it. Let me repost them. Yeah, Lindesk. It's Lindesk. It's a blog. It's got some how-tos. It's a pretty neat site. And I was gonna talk a little bit about Fedora, but I'm gonna go ahead and let 3:30 go next, and I'll say Fedora for the last story. If you're ready, 3:30.
Yeah, I'm ready. So like I said earlier, I was gonna talk about the thing that Zoke pulled out from under me. Which is fine. We're used to that by now. But I guess what I can bring up, if I haven't talked about it before, is a website called Wekupa.com. It is a social network for people that use computers. What they have is a little tracker application that you run, and it's Windows, Mac, and Linux. They just actually got the Linux version running. You just run this little tracker, and it looks at what you're running and just makes lists of stuff. And then you can go into the website and you get metrics like, you know, how often do you use this type of application, and you can do reviews and join teams, and it's really weird to explain, but it's really cool to find out just what you're running and how often you're running it. So I'll link that in the IRC.
Does it generate pie charts and bar graphs for you of all of your wasted time looking at, like, 4chan and stuff, or what?
Well, right now, because it only does applications, so, like, when I'm sitting on IRC all day not doing anything, all it shows
right.
is that I sat in Terminator for 6.5 hours.
Right.
Or, you know, if I was surfing the web, it shows that I had Firefox open for, you know, 10 hours. So it's not completely granular yet.
Sure.
There was an update to try and get what they were calling web apps, like YouTube and things like that. Things that have an application-style interface to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them do that update on one of the computers, and we'll see how that goes. If it goes terribly, I'll pull it off the computer. But if you go to wekupa.com/330, you can see mine.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And one of the cool things is you can get the goofy badges for your blog or website. You can get those, and it'll show like your your five most used, your last five used, and your five overall or something. I can't remember the exact ways it breaks it up. But yeah,
if I have a terminal window open all day in the background though, and maybe I go through it, you know, a couple of times here and there, is that going to show that I've been using the it only tracks it when it's the active application, or do you know yet?
Actually, right now it's kind of iffy. Sometimes it notices that that you were losing focus on it, and sometimes it doesn't. They're doing a lot of patching trying to fix that, but for the most part, it...
So it says here that you spend most of your time at http://ilovelittleboys.com.
Oh,
is that right?
Booby Ben.
Yeah, it was Klaatu's new screenshot site.
Do you want to join him in the bin?
No, I do not, sir.
Okay.
God knows what he'd do to me in there.
That was a little risky.
So yeah, this is the best thing I could pull out of my butt on such short notice, because Zoke's a wonderful individual and stole my plan.
Don't worry, I've already lectured him, as everyone else only got one story and he took three. He's in trouble, don't worry.
Right, Zoke.
It's a nice excuse when you come unprepared anyway.
Hey, I was prepared.
Anything else, 330?
No, not really.
And that's okay to post in the show notes?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right, Asmuth, what do you got for us?
Well, I've been noticing some neat hardware that has showed up on the scene. One is MiFi. Let me post a link to that. That didn't work. try that one. Okay, what it is, it's a little gizmo about the size of a credit card that you can shove in your pocket, pack around with you as you go, and it has a 3G cell network on it, as well as a Wi-Fi. You can use up to five machines on the Wi-Fi, or if you want total privacy on it, you can just use a USB cable, and it disables the Wi-Fi. But you stop and look at that thing, and what it allows you to do. Anybody that's that does a lot of mobile networking, you end up with cable strung everywhere, and you end up with things plugged into your computer, into your laptop, that dongles and whatnot, and it just kind of messy. And this cleans all that up, and it's neat from the standpoint that you don't really even know you got it with you. You just have Wi-Fi everywhere you go, whether you're on the 3G or whether you're in an actual hotspot. And also, I've been noticing that Verizon is the particular outfit that's doing this, but they've got an HP netbook now with they got $200 for it, with a service plan, but it has a 3G card built into it, which is another thing for cleaning up a mobile system. You pack it around, you use the Wi-Fi and the netbook where you can, or you use your 3G where you don't have a hotspot. I don't know. I've been watching technology for a long time, and this stuff's moving fast.
That's just because you're old, Az.
Well, it is, but it's moving faster than it used to.
Yeah, we certainly live in exciting times, don't we? I mean, kids these days can't believe that, like, my daughter cannot believe that my parents grew up and didn't have electricity. She can't understand that. And just look what we have today for just TVs and that compared to what you had back in the late 70s, you know, or mid-70s. You had the old black and white bloody things.
When I first got involved with computers, they were the size of a washing machine, and only businesses had them. And they had the computing power of a Casio calculator.
I had to explain to many Zuck what a record player and a cassette deck were. I didn't venture into 8-track land.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about an 8-track?
I didn't venture there. I was having a hard enough time trying to tell them what the other two were.
Oh, some of that's just scary. You talk about, you know, well, back before we had cell phones, we had, you know, phones on the corner that you could put money in and use. Before cell phones?
Yeah, aren't they becoming rarity?
It doesn't actually sound like that, obviously.
A paid telephone. Like,
yeah.
About the only paid telephone you see these days outside a post office, where once upon a time they were sort of on the corner of every block.
Well, they took
they don't
away
even have
all the old...
anymore.
They took away all the old red public phone boxes that are very famous for being in England. And, well, I read a statistic, I believe, that actually there's more red phone boxes in Hollywood than there are left in the UK now, because they're all taken away.
I wouldn't doubt it.
On phone booths, we don't have them on the street corners anymore outside, but they do have payphones, like, inside buildings. Like, if you go into the local bar or something, there's a payphone there sometimes. But you're right, you never see them outside anymore. But even when you did, you had to be afraid of them. You never knew what you're going to find in the earpiece.
There's the old story about don't go checking for change because someone will stick a needle in there and infect you with AIDS.
Actually, I was thinking more of the chewed bubble gum in the earpiece.
Yeah, that too. But I was just saying that there was a story floating around.
As getting back to your story.
Oh, yeah.
Does anybody else think that as an art or just one split personality talking at intervals?
Hey, I just got two microphones.
I actually have an entire theory on this that I'll be posting later on. I think I'm going to win the Nobel
Prize.
It's
called schizophrenia.
And you're never alone with it.
Yeah, but I have to carry on the most interesting conversations.
As I seen that thing you're talking about at the Verizon store last week, and it's got a USB connection on it, too, so you can plug it in and recharge it.
Yeah, you can recharge the darn thing out of your netbook or recharge it. Well, I got a mobile adapter for it, and it just boggles my mind where this technology has gone. I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago that mobile computing, for me, included ham radio.
Well, I can remember the first cell phone, you know, the bricks. I mean, they were, and that wasn't that long ago.
Hey, I remember the first cell phones, you carried them around, they were like a field phone. They came in a box, and the handset came out and stayed connected to the box.
Under the skin, so that it's immediately accessible.
Clatter, you sound like you got your phone embedded under your skin.
Sorry.
I got it.
He's got his phone somewhere.
Yeah.
I always have it. I don't understand why I'm so quiet. Sorry.
Is that a cordless phone, Clatu?
Yeah.
Is that a cordless phone?
Yep, sure is.
Yeah, the battery's probably going dead.
I charged it for like 3 hours in preparation for this call. But that's a good working theory. I'll grab the backup, the handset, and see if that does better.
Okay.
Jesus, just said. Maxwell Smart had a shoe phone. And that was amazing back then.
Yeah. Hey, that was futuristic back then.
It certainly was.
Oh, come on, no more than Bond talking into his watch.
Oh, well, Dick Tracy, I think, started that well before Bond.
Well,
Dick
Tracy had
a watch where he could receive pictures on it. Remember? In the old Dick Tracy cartoons.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was clear back in the 60s or maybe the 50s.
Yeah, 50s even. Yeah.
I think that
television
was
wasn't even that old.
Then you had, what's his name, flying around in his spaceship there. Who was that?
George
with
Jetson.
The strings hanging off it.
Thunderbirds.
No, even before that. Who was
Captain Scarlet?
Was the black and white? No, what was the black and white with Ming? Ming the Merciless. What was the...
Flash Gordon. Okay. That was Buster Crabbe and... What was it? That wasn't
Buck Rogers.
That was the other one.
I think it said Buck Rogers.
No, that was Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon was Ming.
Flash Gordon, yeah.
I said that earlier.
Yeah, and that was back in the 50s.
Seriously.
So you said something.
Art
All right.
is asking as. I swear to God, it is a split personality.
They call it schizophrenia.
As and Art sound as much the same as Mrs. Oak and Zoak, I'm afraid. I don't know what you're talking about.
Peter, it's that desert air.
Mm. No, it means Peter needs to put down the pipe.
Or pass it.
It just doesn't sound anything the same. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, don't be hogging the pipe, will you?
I'm thinking about taking it up today.
Taking what up?
The pipe, whatever the pipe is.
Yeah, it's all that rainwater he's been drinking. It crippled him.
Mm.
The body don't know how to handle pure stuff.
Well, they found out down the south, didn't you, 330, what pure stuff was.
Pure hell.
He found out what swamp water was.
All right, Claude 2, test that phone out.
Okay, testing. Can you hear me any better?
It's clear, but it's still low. It's better than before, though.
Yeah, okay. Weird.
Well, don't be pushing the buttons on us now.
Was that the low battery beep?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
That was a low battery indicator.
Were you going to mention Fedora or something? Wants to be?
Yeah, I was waiting for Claude 2 to get his phone fixed. All right. I installed Fedora, what was it, last week or week and a half ago, on that motherboard I talked about last time on Tit Radio. But the install, I tried both the 32 and the 64-bit. I installed from the live CD and the live USB. And the install is probably the easiest one I've ever seen. It couldn't get any easier than this. I mean, all you do is pick your time zone, partition your hard drive, and then it copies the live image to your hard drive.
Yeah.
It probably takes 10 minutes, I mean, all together. And then when you reboot, then you put in your, you know, for your root password, username, and all that stuff. And I mean, then you're right into a working system. I mean, it's probably easier than any distro I have ever installed. I went with the GNOME desktop, and you get just GNOME the way it's supposed to be. There's no extra stuff added. I mean, it's very basic. I mean, the artwork is beautiful, but it's not bloated with a bunch of crap you don't need.
But is it not bloated with some crap that a lot of people would want?
I mean, somebody's going to want something. They're going to install it, but I'd rather start with like a Debian install and just have the basics and then add what I want to instead of having to take out stuff I don't want. You know what I mean?
I do. Because, I mean, that's the reason I run Arch lately is because you get the absolute bare minimum and then go from there. But your typical user's going to want, you know, to be able to listen to MP3s and stuff like that. And from what I understand, Fedora has absolutely nothing like that in it.
Well, yeah, it's 100% free. I mean, everything's free software in it. You would have to add another repository to get, you know, stuff like MP3 playback and Flash, you know, the non-free NVIDIA drivers.
Fedora uses Yum, doesn't it?
Yep, it uses Yum, and it's...
Very easy to use?
Yeah, it's really easy. I would say it's probably right now equal to apt.
So for a new user who's just installed it, say come over from Windows, is wants to be able to listen to MP3s and watch Flash on YouTube, etc., you don't have to add repositories or anything like that. It's easy to go in and install stuff
you,
like
If you want to do stuff like that, you would have to add the RPM Fusion repository.
Once again, that's a pretty simple thing to do.
Yeah, it's pretty simple to do. I haven't installed any on this system I'm looking at right now. It's 100% free. There's no flash or MP3 playback or anything like that.
Yeah, well, from what you're saying, there's no validity to when people say that, you know, it's a pain and that there's no place for it because, you know, it's too hard for newer users to use it. Yeah, it sounds like none of that's true at all, and it's no different to a lot of other distributions out there.
Well, all you need is OGG for the good podcasts anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a point.
Well, you know, the one of the things that actually someone in IRC had run into, they were installing it. Well, they were doing the KDE install, and they were having, like, all kinds of problems, and I was trying to help them, you know, I couldn't figure out what the problem was. And then it turns out, he mentioned along the way that, you know, that his DVD installer must be bad or something. And I was like, wait a minute, your DVD installer, there is no DVD install disk for the KDE version of Fedora. And it turns out he had gotten, you know, his ISO, his DVD ISO from some torrent site. And I guess he must have gotten someone's respin of, you know, Fedora or something, because it was clearly not an official live CD, because the only KDE version Fedora offers is a live CD. They don't offer a live DVD or a DVD installer. So, you know, I mean, I don't know what some people review, you know, for Fedora, but if you're going to try out a distro that you're not used to, you should certainly, well, any distro, really, but, I mean, certainly if it's one that you haven't tried out before and you want to, like, kind of see if it's the right distro for you or whatever, you want to make sure that you're getting the official ISO image so that you're actually installing what is actually being put out there. That might be an issue for all I know.
I always get the checksum.
Right, yeah.
And then whatever program I use, what's that one in GNOME? I forget the name of it. Brasio? Is that the name of it?
Yeah, Bracero.
Yeah, that one automatically checks it for me.
Just speaking of that, it's the MD5 checksum that you're talking about, isn't
yeah.
it? How does that work? That's something I've never actually looked into. I'd be interested to just understand how it works.
Yeah, someone ought to do a Hacker Public Radio episode about that.
Well, I know there's programs to create it. Like, if you have an ISO, you just created one, you can create your own checksum for it.
Right, it uses some kind of algorithm, mathematical algorithm that comes up with this funky-ass number and letter combination that's only, it's calculated like per section of the ISO or some. Steve Gibson did a thing on that.
All you have to do is type in info core utils and then in single quotes MD5 sum invocation, and you can get all the information you'd ever want on MD5 sums and how you can, you know, create them and how to check them and stuff like that. I don't think it'll go into, like, the technicalities of how they're calculated, but it gives you a lot of information. Because it's on every Linux install. I mean, it's part of the, you know, the GNU utilities that come on the system.
And I don't know if this is a pro or con, but for some people it's a pro. No mono is installed by default.
Huge pro.
And really, the only problem, well, this is really not a problem. The only con I can see, maybe for some people, is SE Linux turned on by default.
Did you have any issues with that, Monster B?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of stuff I was trying to do, I was getting pop-ups, giving me warnings.
Yeah, but those are just warnings, I think. Were you ever hindered from doing something that you wanted to do, like accessing your sound card or, you know, whatever?
The only thing, changing my CPU frequency from a widget, it kept popping up saying that I couldn't do it, that I didn't have permission. But, I mean, that's the only thing I would say that would confuse a new user, is that being turned on by default. Because I think this is just my opinion, I think it's overkill for a normal desktop. But you can go in there and turn it off.
Right. I've never had issues with it. It's never blocked me from doing anything, but I don't do a whole lot of CPU scaling either, so what's that?
But it's definitely worth a try. I mean, I really like it. I'm going to keep it on this one. The only other problem I had is when I would fire up Nautilus or any GUI file manager like PCMan FM, I couldn't access my home directory. It would pop up saying permissions for MonsterB are unknown. It was kind of random, but after today, there was like a 32 megabyte update, security update, and I haven't had the problem since. So maybe it's fixed.
Did you see this problem? What were you doing?
I could not access my home directory from a GUI file manager. I could do it from the terminal, no problem. But when I would fire up Nautilus, it would just sit there and time out and say that permissions for MonsterB are unknown.
Oh, that's really weird.
And I asked the question in the chat room, the Fedora chat room, because I thought maybe it was SE Linux. But they said it wasn't. Nobody really knew what the problem was, but I'm hoping after this last little update that they had today, it might have fixed it.
Yeah, that never happened on any of the alphas or release candidates that I was trying, and it certainly didn't happen in KDE. I don't know, that's an interesting one. Haven't heard of that one before.
But see, it happened on two systems of mine, a 32-bit and a 64-bit. So it just wasn't that one computer. It happened on both. But hopefully it's fixed now.
I'll blame GNOME.
What's that?
I'll blame GNOME.
Yeah, it could be. Have you ever tried making a live USB stick?
Yeah, I have.
It's really neat.
Yeah.
Because it gives you the option to put extra space on the on your USB key, so you can like save things to it. And so every time you plug it in, you get all your stuff back.
Yeah, when I go on trips, that thing saves my life, because inevitably I'm going to visit a friend with a Windows computer, and I'll just boot right into, you know, Fedora and use their computer for whatever I need to do, happily.
Yeah, this is something I hardly ever use. You know, like on your hard drives, how you have that smart, you know, when it boots up in the BIOS?
Yeah.
I forgot what it stands for, but, you know, it checks your hard drive to make sure it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
When I booted into that live USB stick, it told me that one of my hard drives were dying, and it was. I mean, I knew it was going, but it was kind of neat how it popped up, and I could do a scan on it, told me everything that was wrong with it. It was a TiVo drive from 2003. Just trying to get some use out of it until I got a SATA drive for the system.
Right. Yeah, well, that's cool. I've never actually seen a smart warn me about anything until the thing goes dead, and then I look at it and says, oh, yeah, by the way, your hard drive's dead.
But I had no idea it was included. You know, I don't know if it's an extra program or if it's something built into the kernel. I have no idea.
I do not know.
But I don't know what other people are talking about. You know, there's another podcast that was just bad-mouthing Fedora, and I have no idea why. So it's a good operating system.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what they were talking about as well, because I just couldn't figure out, like, I mean, the experience just sounds so surreally bad. I just don't understand, like, what on earth they could have been trying. That was why I was like, the only possible thing I could think of was maybe they got some weird ISO from a torrent site of someone's, like, sort of weird hacked-together re-spin of Fedora, and were trying that and failing miserably. Yeah, I mean, I've used the alphas and the release candidates, and now the actual release, and, you know, obviously I use it at least once a day for some major task. Doesn't seem to be unusable to me.
And they really, PackageKit is perfect now. You just go to, like in GNOME, you go to System, Administration, and then Add, Remove Software.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it couldn't be any easier.
Yeah, and the cool thing about PackageKit, too, is that they're integrating it a lot with the rest of the system, you know, so that it'll recognize in any application that you're running. If you don't have a codec installed, PackageKit will come up and offer, you know, that codec, you know, is available in the repository. Or a font that you don't have on your system, it'll detect that. And if the font is in your repo, it'll offer to install that for you, stuff like that. And they're hoping to expand that to even more, like, I don't know, .docs. If you don't have, for some reason, a text editor that will open a .doc, and you're trying to open a .doc, PackageKit should open up and say, hey, you know, what you could use is this package, OpenOffice or AbbeyWord. Would you like to install one of them? So, cool.
Yeah, I've only used it a few times, the GUI or, you know, package kit, but, like, mainly I use Yum from the command line, and I notice package kit pops up at the top, you know, when it's doing something. Have you noticed that? It says, I forgot what it says, but it brings up package kit. So it must be like syncing or something with package kit, so I can, yeah. Everything's cached.
Yeah, I don't know. That is interesting. I never even noticed that.
Yeah, it shows it right at the top before it does something, before it starts scrolling down.
Yeah, from what I understand, the package kit maintainer is working pretty closely with Fedora, so maybe he is integrating some of the package kit command line stuff with Yum.
Yeah, the main reason I wanted to try Fedora 11 is because of your interview with Paul Frills,
mm-hmm.
when he mentioned that Pulse Audio thing he's working on. What is that called again?
He's going to call it Pulse Cap.
I mean, that's going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic. They'll say a free and open alternative to something like TalkShoe.
Do you know if that's open now for anyone, or is it still like kind of a, like it's, you know, just a, like an invite only?
Well, the service is open to anyone. Like, you can call in and establish a conference room and you know, have SIP calls and dial-in numbers and stuff like that. So, what, you know, we're talking on TalkShoe right now. We could do that right now on talk.fedoraproject.org. That's open. I guess you probably have to register or something, but that's it.
Right.
The PulseCast itself, the application that'll sit on your local machine, enabling you to record from all these different inputs and outputs and stuff like that, that doesn't work yet, I guess. So he's still working on it.
Monster, but you don't get to see the Plymouth splash screen when Fedora boots, though, do you?
I'm not sure. Okay, on the 64-bit install I had, I know for a fact I didn't see it, but on the 32-bit with the Intel card, I guess this is the Plymouth screen. I don't know.
You see, like, the sun and the planets.
Fedora logo?
It's a Fedora logo.
Yeah, that's Plymouth.
Okay, yeah, it's just like a Fedora logo, and as it's loading, it's filling in the color of the logo.
Yep.
But what about the sun and the planets and that? I thought that was Plymouth.
That was Fedora 10.
They've taken that out of this one.
Well, no, they're just changing the animation that you get to see. Instead of a sun, you get to see the Fedora logo fill up, and then it kind of pops on with a little flash of light or something.
Oh, okay.
So it'd change every release. It'd be something different, probably.
I like this one. I hope they just keep this one around. Nice and simple, you know, but cool looking.
Now, you've been using Fedora since what? Version 8?
That's 8, yeah.
Now, do you do a complete fresh install every time, or do you just do an upgrade when you go from one release to another?
I do just an update, but this time I did a fresh because I went from 32 to 64-bit this time.
Oh, okay.
So I guess I'm using EXT4 now. So, yeah, everything kind of... I just did a big major update. I mean, a big major reinstall.
All you do is get a little squiggly bloody line going back and forth under the Fedora sign.
No, that's not Plymouth. According to YouTube, it is. Well, they're wrong. X has already started at that point. That's after Plymouth has occurred. That's not.
Well, this is straight after Grub.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not. It is.
Well, according to this, I'll just post it.
Yeah, go for
just
it.
So you know.
I can't watch it because I don't have Flash, but they're wrong. Trust me, I have it on my triple EPC, and you see Grub, and then it goes to a pale blue screen. It's got a little white in the center, and it becomes the Fedora logo, and that fills up with white, and then it flashes again, and it becomes the proper logo. And then it goes to what you're seeing there. That's when X has actually started.
Okay.
Plus, this is Rawhide. Which one is that? Is that 10?
Well,
yeah, 10.
Rawhide is the next version. So that's like Lenny for Debian, or not Lenny, Sid for Debian. Rawhide is the next, you know, whatever the next release is going to be. They call it Rawhide.
Well, I really like that solar version they did.
Yeah, no, that was great. But, I mean, I like this one too. I like this actually better. It's just, it looks a little bit more like minimalist, but cool, but hip.
Hmm.
Yeah, Peter, I've seen Fedora boot with Plymouth, and that's not it. I think that's what happens if you don't have Plymouth.
Maybe that's just what Rawhide includes.
Yeah, because that would make sense, because they probably don't have a Plymouth theme designed for that yet.
I would videotape it for you, but you just have to try Fedora and look for yourself.
Well, I was going to, actually, but now that they've got rid of that planet one, I'm not going to bother.
I can give you a Fedora 10 disk, Peter, if you really want to try it, the one with the sun.
Yeah, I'm really upset now.
Well, if you went to self, you would have got the disk for Fedora 10 and Fedora 11.
Well, excuse me, and I'd just like to, while we're on the subject of self, I'd like to say a big thank you to Pegwell and Snack Machine for sending me a little bit of self, because I now have all the Zeus and Novell stuff from self.
Sweet.
And I don't want the bloody Fedora shit. If it hadn't got the sun on it.
If I had your address, I'd send you something too.
No worries. But thanks. And Little Miss 64, she thanks Pegwell and Snacky as well.
Was there any Twinkies in that box?
Not unless Novell made them. No.
I don't know if you'd want Novell Twinkies and have Bono.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that argument because I know nothing about it. But
I was talking about the sickness.
If Microsoft and Novell had nothing to do with Mono, would people worry about it as much?
Well, if Microsoft and Novell had nothing to do with it, it wouldn't exist.
Yeah, but that's right. So, but if someone else had written it, would it be such a big deal? I think not, to be honest with you. But
you mean like Apple and Canonical did it?
Well, yeah. Let's say Canonical did it, not Apple. I often wonder whether it would be such a big deal.
I don't think it would be as big of a deal, but I think that's big enough of a deal that it's a Microsoft technology that people are just running to adopt for, like, no apparent reason, for no good reason.
Yeah.
Batu, it's the same reason people run to Microsoft anyway, because that's all they know. They're like animals led to slaughter.
Yeah. All right. There you go.
All right. Anything else before I wrap it up? Anyone?
No, not for me.
And I put a bow on it.
Stick a fork in it, it's done.
All right.
Get to the bin, Zach.
Roll it out the door.
Before I wrap it up, I just want to mention that the How I Found Linux series is still going strong. So if you want to send an audio clip, you can just send it to monsterb@linuxcranks.info or send it to feedback@titradio.info. It doesn't matter. And I'm sitting on a few now. I need to get these out, and I haven't had a chance to reply to these guys. But Weirded Out, Linux Fan Dan, Oscar, Eddie, and Guitar Man, just want to say thanks for sending them in. I'm sorry I didn't reply back to you. And speaking of Guitar Man, he was on the Open Source Musician podcast. Did you guys hear that? He was interviewed on there. It was a pretty good episode.
Oh, yeah, I listened to it today. It was very good. Very, very good episode.
So get over there and download that one. And
Monster B, did you talk about the Ham Shack last week?
I think that was a couple weeks ago.
Okay, because I just want to reiterate the fact that those guys do a really good show, and it's got a lot to do with Linux, and it's well worth listening to.
Yep, it is, and we need feedback for this show. So if you guys could please send us some feedback.
It's
I'd give you some feedback, but
Ben,
I get sent to the bin.
Whenever that pump speaks, it's
crap. Hold on. Zoke is in the bin.
Yeah.
That's crap. So send us some feedback at titradio.info. And thought I was going to have a special song tonight, but I don't. It's not ready. So any requests?
I would love to hear a song about a mower. And a poor bloke reading a letter.
Oh, jeez. That one again?
Yeah.
Hey, I like that
one. Come on, Peter.
Well, he requested, so I'm going to go ahead and play it, and I'll talk to you guys next week on Linux Cranks.
See you.
All right, good night.
Night, everybody.
Night, everyone.
Good night.
Hold on, let me get Zoke out of the bench so he can say good night.
Let me
night, everyone.
Say it.
Good night.
Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. She didn't like the simple life, living on the farm. All I wanted was a wife to hold in my arms. She never liked my tractor, I didn't like her mouth. I'm headed to the back 40, she's heading south. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. She always liked the country club, highfalutin crowd. I had better things to do, like pulling a plow. Now she's history, since I read my mail. I guess the chemistry has gone straight to well. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. Although she's gone, still got plenty. Still got the farm and the 40-20. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. The more I think about it, I'm feeling a whole lot better. The way she stayed on my case, it won't be hard to forget her. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter. Sitting on my John Deere, reading a Dear John letter.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.